All right. So this is a joint work with David Holland, also from Harvard University. So consider the scenario where, you know, you've installed a piece of software and that broke a bunch of other tools. I know it's never happened to any of you. So the next thing I did was...
Sorry. You just need to speak a little louder. Sorry. Just speak a little bit.
Okay. All right. So, you know, so since the install had broken a bunch of the tools, I tried uninstalling the software, but that was not good enough because, you know, the config files were still corrupt. I mean, it removed the data that it installed, but it didn't undo the modifications that it made on the config files. Okay. So what can I do in this scenario? If I had a versioning file system, you know, presumably it would store all the old data, so in theory I can go back and undo those changes. But the problem is I don't know which files were modified, right? I mean, I know that some config files were affected, but I don't know which of those were modified by the install manager, right? On the other hand, there are systems that track causality. They track dependencies between applications and files and dependencies between data sets and other data sets, okay? So basically, they tell you which files were modified by the application installer, okay? So, but however, you know, it doesn't have the old versioning, old versions of the config files, so you cannot undo those changes. So if you combine causality and versioning, you can recover from this scenario, right? So causality will tell you which files were modified, and versioning data will let you recover those files. Similarly, you can imagine using the system for intrusion recovery where, you know, the causal data will tell you which files were affected by your bot, and the versioning data will tell you, will give you the old data. And you can also use it for enforcing intellectual property compliance and also to reproduce old research results. Okay. So, okay, there have been some versioning papers in the literature. So how applicable or how useful are those versioning algorithms in the context of causality, right? So consider this scenario where that includes the Apache split log file vulnerability. What this vulnerability did was it let an attacker overwrite any .log file in the system. Okay? So consider the scenario where, you know, you come into your office at like 8 a.m. and you start up your database, and that opens your database log. Okay, and at around 9 a.m., people start coming in and start doing their work, so that applies some more transactions to your log. And like at like 10, you know, someone exploits the split log file vulnerability and overwrites the database log file. And at 11, people have not yet detected it, and you're still, you know, you're still performing your transactions, and you're still appending to the log. At like 12, you detect that there's been a corruption. Okay. So, if you used open-close versioning, which is one of the algorithms that you find in the literature, it would create a version at around 9 a.m. And so, when you detect the corruption, you don't have any of the data that was created after 9 a.m. backed up. So you can only recover to the state at 8 a.m. Okay. If you used version on every write, sure enough, all data is backed up, but, I mean, all data is backed up and you can actually recover, but it's really expensive. I'll show you the numbers for those in the end. Okay. So basically the goal of this talk is, can you, if you combine causality and versioning, can you take advantage of causality to make more meaningful versions? Okay. So to that end, we introduced two new algorithms that take advantage of causality at runtime, and the algorithms are cycle avoidance and graph finesse. Cycle avoidance uses per object local metadata to create new versions, and graph finesse uses a global graph of dependencies, and based on that, it makes versioning decisions. We also evaluate how effective these algorithms are and their runtime overheads. Okay. So now that I've introduced, I've told you that versioning and causality is useful, and you know, the traditional algorithms may not be sufficient. I'll provide some background on PASS, which is our causality tracking system. Okay. So PASS stands for Provenance Aware Storage System, and here are the components of PASS. I'll walk you through the functionality of each component in the context of a read system call. So there's a process P that issues a read on a file A, and the interceptor is a component that's monitoring a system call, system events, and whenever there's an interesting event, it calls the observer with the appropriate arguments. So in this case, the observer notes that the process P has read a file A, so basically information has flowed from file A to process P, therefore P depends on A. So it generates an appropriate record, and sends it to the analyzer. So the analyzer is the component that is looking at all the dependency records and trying to make versioning decision. Okay, and then it then sends the record down to the distributor. The distributor is a component that caches the dependency records of transient objects. Okay, so why do we care about dependency records of transient objects? It's because persistent objects are related to each other through transient objects. Okay. So in the case that the process P later on writes to a file B, you know, A and B will be related through this process P. Okay. So in this case, the control flow stops right here, but there are a couple more components. One is Lasagna, other one is Waldo. Lasagna is the provenance-aware file system that stores both the provenance and the data, and Waldo is a user-level indexing daemon that indexes the provenance that's stored. Okay. So now what happens in the case that process P issues a write on another file B? So first of all, you can notice that there is the dependency record that was generated in the previous read system call is cached at the distributor. Right? The observer generates a record that says that this file B depends on P. The analyzer looks at the record and tries to make a versioning decision, and then you know, it sends it to the distributor. At this point, the distributor pulls out any records that it may be caching for the transient object. So in this case, it pulls out the record that P depends on A and sends them both to Lasagna, which, you know, then stores it in the log. Okay. So the important thing, another important thing to notice here is that even transient objects are versioned because they're involved in this. Okay. And okay, so now I've provided you some background on how causality is tracked. So, and I've told you that analyzer is the component that's responsible for performing the versioning decision. So next I'll talk about the versioning algorithms itself. Okay. So first of all, let me start off by explaining the intuition for the algorithms. Okay, so consider the simple scenario where a process is reading and writing the same file. Okay, if, you know, if it's reading and writing the same file, and you don't do anything about it, you have a cyclic dependency right there. And since you're trying to capture causality, you know, it's wrong to just allow it to be like that. So you need to like introduce a version somewhere to, so that you enforce causality. So basically, you can think, you can conclude that the creation of a version of a cycle is an indicator that, you know, if you version at that instant, it could be useful later. Okay. So first, I'll show how open-close versioning, which is one of the simple versioning algorithms out there, how it allows cycles to occur in your stream. Okay. So the simple algorithm that it follows is on the last close of a file, freeze the file. So the next time it's opened and written to, you trigger a new version of the file. And I'll use this example scenario to show that a cycle will be formed. And so this example scenario consists of two processes, P and Q, that are operating on files A and B in an intertwined fashion. Okay? So first, when the process P issues a read on the file A, so the initial version of A is 1, so you add a dependency from process P to the file A1. Next, when Q reads file B, you add a dependency from Q to B1. Later, now when process P writes to file B, Q closed the file B after reading it, so this is the first write after a close, so you create a new version of B, okay? And so you add a dependency from B to, from B to P, okay? So when Q writes the file A, you create a new version of A and say that A depends on Q. So now when P issues a read on A, it's reading a new version of A, so you add the edge from P to the new version of A. Okay. So later on, now when Q reads file B, you add an edge from Q to the new version of B. So you can see that there's a cycle here. I'll highlight it for you. Okay. So basically, open-close versioning allows cycles to happen, and this can violate causality. Okay. A quick word on version on every write. Version on every write preserves causality. There are no cycles because, you know, every read creates a new version of a process, and every write creates a new version of the file. And since every operation is creating a new object, literally, so there are no duplicates either. The disadvantage is that most of the versions are unnecessary. I mean, it's not just that the space is going to be, that there's a wastage of space, there's also makes recovery harder, as we'll see later on. So next, I'll show you the first of the algorithms that we have introduced. It's the cycle avoidance algorithm. It preserves causality by avoiding cycles. It uses local information on each object and then makes the versioning decision. Okay? And it's somewhat similar to the timestamp ordering algorithm that you'd see in databases. The intuition for this algorithm is that you freeze an object whenever you add new causality to an object. That is, you know, if you add a dependency to an object that that did not previously exist on the object, then you freeze the object. Okay. So here's an example. So when the analyzer receives a record that says A1 depends on B2, where A and B are objects and 1 and 2 are their versions, if there's no object B in A's history, then you freeze A. If there is an object B in A's history, first check to see if it's a duplicate. That is, the B in A is also version 2. If there's an object B3 in A's history, so basically, A already depends on a later version of B. So you already recorded the causality of B2 in B3 itself. So you don't need to record this. You can discard this record. If, however, there is an object B1 in A's history, then the record, the new record that is A1 depends on B2 is adding new causality, so you freeze A. So I'll just show how cycle avoidance works for two steps. So there's process P with version 1, and there's file A with version 1. Process P reads file A. So at this point, there is no object A in P's history. So you freeze P2 and P and introduce a new version P2 and add this dependency. But the important thing to notice here is there was no cycle, and it still created the version. And so basically, cycle avoidance is a slightly conservative algorithm because it does not have global information. It has to use whatever local information it has and create the new version. Okay. So in this case, it does that. And so I'll jump straight to this last step. And this is how the graph looks before the last read is executed. You can see that P has one more version that has been created. And Q's version also has been incremented to 2. So now when Q reads B, so there's already a B1 in Q's history. Okay. So but now when it reads B, it's reading a new version of B. So basically, that's new causality. Okay. So because of that, you freeze Q to introduce a new version, and then you add the edge that Q3 depends on B2. Okay. So cycle avoidance does prevent cycles, but because it's using local per-object information, it creates more versions than necessary sometimes. Okay. So next, I'll show you a graph fitness algorithm. This algorithm uses global knowledge. So basically, it keeps a global dependency graph. And based on that graph, it makes versioning decisions. So whenever you add a new, the analyzer gets a new dependency record, checks to see if that dependency record, if it added the dependency record as is, if checks to see if that forms a cycle. If it does form a cycle, it freezes one of the nodes in that dependency record. Otherwise, it just adds the record as is. So this also subsumes open and close algorithm in that you need to freeze any file on the last close. Okay. So an example is when the analyzer receives a record that says the file A1 depends on file B, on B2, if there is a B2 already in A's history, then it's a duplicate. You discard the record. Otherwise, you check to see if there's a path from B2 to A1. So you know, you receive a record that says A1 depends on B2. Then you check to see if there's a path from B2 to A1. If it's true, then you have a cycle, obviously. So in that case, you freeze A1 and change the record to A2 depends on B2, and then add it to the graph. If there's no cycle, you just add the record as is to the graph. Okay. So I'll just show how this algorithm works for just the last step. It functions similar to open-close until the last step. So when Q issues a read on B, you know, you add an edge from Q to B. I mean, you would add an edge from Q to B in open-close, but in this case, the graph fitness algorithm checks to see, makes a check and sees that it would form a cycle, so it freezes Q, and you can see that there's no cycle formed. So what this slide is showing is how the graphs look at the end of at the end of the last step for cycle avoidance and graph fitness, and you can see that there are fewer cycles in, there are fewer versions in graph fitness. But both of them don't have cycles, okay? And so here's a comparison. Cycle avoidance uses local state. Graph fitness uses global state. Cycle avoidance creates a few unnecessary versions, but since graph fitness is using global knowledge, it creates fewer versions. In the evaluation, you'll see that cycle avoidance has low runtime overhead, but graph fitness can have high runtime overheads. So I'll briefly talk about the implementation. So we implemented the system on Linux 2.6.23.17. Lasagna, which is basically the provenance error file system, was a stackable file system that we derived from eCryptFS. And a little bit about the versioning file system. For each file, we maintain a version file that is basically a log of the deltas for each version. And we also have, for each directory, we have a redo log where we just record all the modifications to the directory over time. Okay. So next, I'll present the evaluation results. So the goal of the evaluation was threefold. One was to see what would be the runtime overheads a user might see, and what would be the space overheads in the different algorithms, and how do the algorithms compare during recovery. Okay. This was our test platform. All the experiments that we ran five times, and the numbers I present are averages of five times, and the standard deviation was less than 5%. Okay. And we ran the experiments in all these modes. We used EXE2 as the baseline. Lasagna was stacked on EXE2. We also collected numbers for plain versioning. So plain versioning just used open-close versioning, but no causal data was collected. And with causal data, we ran in the following modes, in open-close, cycle avoidance, graph fitness, and version on every write. So here's the overhead that you would see in plain versioning for Linux compile. The overhead, so the y-axis is the elapsed time, and each bar is broken into system, user, and wait time. So plain versioning adds around 12% overhead. And you can see that most of the overhead is in the orange part. So basically, most of the overhead was in the wait time or the I/O time. Okay. So if you introduce the other versioning, causally aware versioning algorithms, that is open-close with causal data collection, cycle avoidance, and graph fitness, the overhead increases from 5% to 9%, or 5 to 9%. And if you throw in version all, I mean version on every write, you have an overhead of 57%, which is kind of high. And you can also see in most of the algorithms, the increase is in the orange part of the bar, so that's mostly the wait time. Okay. And the space overheads, the y-axis is in GB. The plain versioning has a 3% overhead. And when you add the causal versioning, they have overheads of an additional 13 to 15%. And version all has really high overhead of like 121%. So we also ran benchmarks for Postmark Blast. They have similar, the overheads follow a similar pattern, so I'll not be showing that. So another interesting thing that I'll show is results for a mercurial activity benchmark. So the goal of this benchmark was to evaluate what kind of overhead a user might see in a development scenario where, you know, the user is modifying a small subset of the files over a long period of time. Okay. So plain versioning adds, so what we did here was we started with the initial version of our repository and added as patches each of the changes that we committed over the last 2 years. And plain versioning adds around 26% overhead. And open close and cycle avoidance add another less than 3% overhead to plain versioning. But graph fitness has a really high overhead. And you can see that there's a huge spike in the green part of the bar graph. And this spike can be explained by this. At some point, we moved from Linux 2.6.19.1 to 2.6.23.17. And so basically, there was that patch that touched around 20,000 files. So basically, when that was being processed, every read or write was being checked against a graph with 20,000 nodes for cycles. So you can, that explains the really high overhead in the system time. Version all actually has lesser overhead than graph fitness, but it's still worse than the other algorithms. And so the space overheads for mercurial activity is follows pretty much the similar pattern to the one in Linux compile, where you know version all has the highest overhead and plain versioning has around 27% overhead. And the other remaining ones add around 3 to 4% to plain versioning. Next, I'll present some results for recovery benchmarks. So the goal of this benchmark was to see how the algorithms perform in a scenario where open-close is not sufficient. So this is a micro-benchmark that models the Apache split log file scenario I presented in the introduction. So what we had here was, you know, a process starts up and starts writing data to a file, and then at some point it forks off a child that reads these files and then writes some data back to the parent through a pipe. And so basically the pipe simulates the socket, and whenever this the parent reads from the pipe, that changes, that indicates a change in causality, and therefore the causal versioning algorithms will force a new version at that point. Okay. So first I'll show you what the space utilization was at the end of the experiment. For causal data, open-close cycle avoidance and graph fitness consumed on order the same amount of data, whereas the same amount of space, whereas version all consumed an order of magnitude more data, which is around 80 megabytes. And when you come to versioning data, open-close did not really capture any versions because it had just created the file, so it assumed that there's nothing to version. Cycle avoidance and graph fitness recorded around 470 MB of versioning data, and version on every write records around 2 GB of versioning data. Okay. So first, next I'll show the recovery times for, so there were totally 12 versions in all, and we computed the recovery times for rolling back one version, rolling back five versions, and rolling back nine versions. You can see that the recovery times were between 23 to 27 seconds for all of them. And so when you throw in recovery times for version on every write, you can see that it's really high. And the amount of data recovered is the same in all of them, but the amount of data read is slightly higher when you have version on every write. Even then, the main reason that the recovery times are so high for version on every write is that, you know, the data is spread over so much more area of the disk, and you end up doing a lot of disk seeks. Okay. So with this, I'll wrap up my talk. Combining causality and versioning enables novel functionality. And so I presented new algorithms for taking advantage of causal information at runtime and to create more meaningful versions. And the two algorithms that I presented are cycle avoidance and graph fitness. Cycle avoidance is comparable to open-close. Its performance is comparable to open-close, but it may create more versions than necessary at times. Graph fitness provides greater control on versioning, but it can be inefficient at times. With that, I'll take any questions.
Questions?
Ajay Gulati, VMware. In the beginning, you gave an example where there was a log file at 8 a.m. and then you look at a failure at 12. So in your system, if there is a single process writing to the file, will it fall back to the same state that you won't have a new version at 12?
The basic thing is that you know, if there's a single process, it does not create more versions. It assumes that, you know, the causality is not changing, so there's no need to create a new version, right? But in that case, it probably does not. But in the case that, you know, where you have, the case that is interesting for us is the one where you have like a second buggy process coming along and trashing the work of this good single process. That's the one that we care about.
Oh, okay, so for a single process, it is open-close, and causality is dependent on multiple processes.
Yes,
upgrading
exactly.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Hey, actually, I have a question, actually. It looks like the tests you ran were on relatively small data sets. Even the Linux kernel test is on the order of 20 or 30,000 files. Any sense of how cycle avoidance or graph fitness will do when you have a million files? I mean, you mentioned that graph fitness might run into problems if there are lots of files. So.
Mm-hmm. I think the algorithm, basically cycle avoidance uses local data, right? So it depends on the size of the local data. If there's a lot of local data, you can expect some amount of slowdown, but it's still going to perform better than graph fitness because, you know, graph fitness has to still like do a check across the whole graph.
Okay. Great, let's thank the speaker.